Welcome, Gregory, to Executive.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Do you have a morning ritual? What is it?
I do. I have a morning ritual. I get up, I meditate, and then I do yoga, and then I sit outside and look at the ocean and the sun coming up.
What is the best constructive guidance you've received in your career path?
I think that, being an entrepreneur can be pretty rough. And over the 30 years in my 12 startups and all the awards and everything that I've done, the main thing is what I call a handful, which is focus, drive, enthusiasm, discipline, and optimism. And those things I think are key to being successful and making it through pretty much anything, including entrepreneurship.
You are a serial entrepreneur and investor. What is the difference between being an investor and an angel investor?
Angels work on earlier stage deals. So if you look at the life cycle, you have the vision stage, which is like pre-seed, and then you have seed, and then you have series seed and A round, and so on and so forth. I like to invest in the early stage, and those are typically angels. So the rounds are a little smaller. The companies are usually very early on. The later stage, you have the VCs and the LPs on that side. They're not investing their own money a lot of times. They're investing other people's money, and so they're using funds which then are larger amounts in order for the numbers to work for them.
Do you recall the very first lesson you learned in entrepreneurship?
Oh yeah, I certainly do. The very first lesson and the thing I tell entrepreneurs all the time is that you have to do research not just on your product, not just on your customers, and not just on your industry, but your overall ecosystem. A lot of entrepreneurs fail. When I studied the failure numbers, a lot of them failed because they didn't see things coming, and that's because they didn't study their entire ecosystem. So you have to think of that, right? You have to understand what's around you, like you're dropped into a city, right? You have to understand the culture, you have to understand how things move, and so on and so forth. So understanding your ecosystem, the best thing I learned and the best advice regarding it.
For someone who coexists with autism and dyslexia, what guidance do you have for people who lack patience?
I think that everybody struggles. Like right now, I'm clenching my hands and doing what's called masking, where you're keeping your stuff together while you get through a conversation. And I think that when you're fighting through things, you have to realize that other people are as well. I used to think, well, I'm special because I have autism and I have tics and things happen, or I have dyslexia, so I can't read very well and I need a machine to read to me and things like that. But everybody has a struggle, and they're different. And those struggles that other people have are just as important to them as yours are to you, and just as difficult for them as yours are to you. So I think it's really important to remember that and be empathetic and sympathetic in some scenarios for what other people are going through as you have these conversations. It's really important to understand the other person because you already understand.
In business, how do you deal with rejection?
But it's not personal. Right, so when somebody rejects what you're trying to sell or propose or whatever, they're not rejecting you. They're rejecting something else. You have to disattach yourself from what you're selling or what you're trying to re whatever. So take that item away from you personally and put it on the desk in front of you and make sure that you understand they're rejecting that. Learn why, and then change that thing. Try to see it from their perspective so you can change the outcome of rejection to positive.
What is one thing that people would be surprised by learning about you?
The autism. When I was young, I struggled a lot. I'm 53 now, so I've been managing this for many, many years, and I'm o only level one. I think people think that autism is that you can see it, like somebody that's missing an arm or something. It's not. It's internal. And if you've met one person with autism, you met one person with autism. It's different for every. And I think that the thing that frustrates me the most is when somebody says, "Oh, you can't tell." And for me, I'm like, "No, because it's internal. It's not external. It's what we feel inside is not something you can see." And the other thing is, if you have dyslexia or autism or something, and somebody says to you, "Well, I think I have that too," it's sort of It's sort of like saying to somebody that's missing a leg that you sprained your ankle, so you also are missing a leg. And it sort of disqualifies the struggle that you've been through. And it's not a cool thing to say to somebody who's just trying to get by every single day.
Very powerful example. What is the most important decision you've made in your life?
That's a really good question. This one's a good question. I would say marrying my wife. My wife is atypical. She's not neurodivergent, and I really struggle with normal everyday things without her. And because I married her, it's when everything really started to take off, because she was helping me with everyday things, so it wasn't so cluttered. You know, my life wasn't so cluttered just trying to manage day-to-day things that are really hard for me, because the business stuff is actually really easy.
Since you credit your wife, what advice do you have on relationships?
I think that I was just talking to my wife about this, and what I said is what we talked about is that your partner is your partner, and it's not unlike what you have at work, right? I mean, there are areas where people are strong and areas where people are weak, and there are times when people are strong and there are times when people are weak. And the partnership with somebody else must be a joint effort, and they both have to understand expectations. When I met my wife, I told her about all of my things, and I also told her that, you know, when I'm focusing on work, it's the only thing on my mind, and you know, she would have to be able to deal with these things, which she does, and blows my mind. But I think that the understanding in the relationship that this is truly a partnership, and like a partnership that you have at work or in business, making sure that both parties understand that when the other person is struggling, that's when you have to, you know, rise. And when you're struggling, that's when they need to rise. And that is across the board, not just emotionally. It's in every possible way. And I think that is really key. You know, you can't say, well, I'm having a hard day, and the other person says, well, I'm having a hard day. Somebody has to. And, you know, this ongoing trade-off and relationship where you're doing that out of love and compassion and respect for the other person is different than doing it out of, you know, some sort of requirement, if that.
Speaking of strengths and weaknesses, do you have any hidden talents, Gregory?
I'm good at business stuff, and I'm good at overcoming things that I think are impossible, but I'm not good at very much else. I mean, I really struggle with just getting around day to day with the autism, but when it comes to business, I really excel. So I don't really think I have any other hidden talents. I think mine are pretty public.
You have achieved a lot, and there's many more milestones in your path, I'm sure. When the heart and mind don't agree, what do you do?
Your questions are so great. I really like them. I think that the heart is emotional and the mind is logical. This is just for me. And for me, because of autism, I think, or what I've been told anyway, my emotions are pretty subdued, and I mainly work off of logic. And even when I do have bouts of depression and anxiety and all the stuff that everybody has every day, I also feel like emotions will lie to you. You know, if you know, because what happens with emotions is it produces chemicals, and the chemicals are drugs and on drugs, and you're acting differently if you weren't. So to me, keeping the logical perspective is important, and understanding when your emotions are just lying to you upset. That's how I get the two to agree.
When we're not feeling, some of us may be eating. Do you have a favorite comfort food?
Oh, my wife, best. I mean, so that's my favorite.
Do you have any pet peeves?
Oh my gosh, I have so many. I mean, I hate disorganization. Drives me crazy. And I really hate it when there's disorganization out in the world. You know, like when you're getting on the freeway and people are rushing to get in front of you and kind of cut people off, and it feels like, you know, like how come you don't know? It works like a zipper, right? There's one in front, one in the back. Everything would be fine if people were like that, and nobody would do that if they were in a store, just rush in front of somebody and, you know, jump in front of. But somehow when they're in a car, they feel like they don't have to be good people. That really irritates me, because I think we all are good people in our soul, and we need remember that the other person behind us feels the exhaust that we leave behind when we're not kind and thoughtful. That drives me crazy, not being thoughtful.
In your work, you talk about altruistic capitalism. How do you define that?
Yeah, I wrote this article for four. I'm surprised you brought that thing got a lot of attention when I wrote it. It's the idea of using capitalism for an altruistic outcome. So, like in my situation, we help entrepreneurs, and the reason why we help entrepreneurs is because I was just actually writing something to a congresswoman today. The chances of people getting out from check to check living, it's like 4% of people, and 98% of that group do it by a windfall, and 75% of that group do it by starting a business, and then 90% fail starting a business. So I started researching and trying to help entrepreneurs not fail. The outcome of that is a business for me, right? Starting a business where entrepreneurs are going through these classes and we're helping accelerators. But at the end of the day, it's altruistic because we change that number. We change that check to check living. We level the playing field, right? So people like me who I grew up pretty poor, American poor, not other country. And when you're coming up that way, you really feel this. And the chances of people, women and people of ethnicity, I grew up in a model family, is even less. And my focus is altruistic, but I'm using capitalism as the leverage that I need in order to spread this out and help out in an altruistic way. So it's basically using capitalism for altruistic outcome.
Is there an exciting project that you're working on that you can share with us?
I have a book coming out, dear, that I've been working for years. because I have these things, it's really hard for me. So I have to use writers and I have to use a lot of technology in order to get it onto paper. But yeah, that comes out next year. I'm pretty excited about that. And our pre-accelerator program to help entrepreneurs get into accelerators, because only 2% get to accelerators at the beginning of the problem, is rolling out in 2 weeks. Which is free for entrepreneurs. So I'm pretty excited about that. I feel like I'm really gonna help. And folks like me who had nothing, and I mean, I didn't go to college, and I have divergence. And there's a lot of people out there that have their own versions of the. I feel really good about contributing, you know?
Because you've had a healthy dose of success that you have earned, were you ever fazed by it at any point in your path? Did it ever hit you and you go, I made it?
I'll tell you two interesting stories. I when the first transaction, when I sold this company to eBay, the first transaction went down. The money hit the account. I woke up in the middle of the night like three times and sweating, and like it was a dream. I didn't know it was real. And I kept waking up and checking my phone, and I saw all those commas, and I was just like, oh, it's real, and then I would fall asleep and wake up again. Oh my God, it wasn't real, and it's real, and even for a while, I was like, are they going to take the money back out of the account or something? I was really freaked out by it. And the when I was coming up and I was struggling quite a bit, I had this mentor, this guy named Jim Eubanks, and he took me, called me into the office, and I was working in sales at the time. Took me out to lunch, and he bought this Ferrari, and he let me drive it off the lot, and I was just like, I couldn't even believe it. I'm like 19 years old. Grew up poor. I'm wearing a thrift store suit. I was still working three jobs because this one was on commission. He said to me, "You're gonna have one of these cars." So when I sold the business after I realized that the money was real, I went out and bought a Ferrari, and I felt really successful. But the interesting thing happened to me on the way home. I'm driving this car, and I'm just so proud of myself. I saw everybody else in cars, and I saw a lot of people that are just working really hard, just trying to get through their day in normal cars, Hondas. And I sold the car 6 months later because I couldn't handle. I knew how it feels to look at other people like that, and just it doesn't make you feel good about yourself. And I didn't want to. I couldn't handle that, so I sold the car and I got a truck, and now I drive around like everybody else.
Great stories. Gregory, what is the last thing you do before calling it a day?
I have a pet pig. And she is, her name is Winnie, and she's really sweet. They're like dogs. They're small, you know, it's not like. And I go out and I see her and I give her an apple and I hang out with her a little bit. And then I go meditate and do yoga again. And then I sit outside and watch the sun go down with. And that's sort of like my wind down, you know.
Very calming and beautiful. And finally, what do you do and where can people contact you?
My website is gregoryshepherd.com, and there's a lot there. And then the website for the entrepreneurs is bossstartupscience.com, and that's where the classes are. The best thing for people to do is follow me in LinkedIn, because I do a lot of videos and a lot of work and give away a lot of education and experience and stuff that I've learned over the years in LinkedIn. But you can go to gregoryshepherd.com also, and I send a newsletter or whatever you like. I try to. There's YouTube, and you know, there's. I try to spread this stuff out for free as much as I can to try to help folks like me that really had it hard. I mean, you know, the 90% failure rate and the collection of these numbers is consistent for like 20 years. And when I study this, it's because the entrepreneurs are making the same mistakes over and over. And you know, if you look at the evolution of just the mobile phone over, it's substantially better than it was. Yet these entrepreneurs are still failing it now. And so my life's mission is to try to help with income inequality and marginalized groups by giving them the experience and the knowledge that they can get from me for free. Because, like me, a lot of them couldn't even afford to go or take out loans and be in debt for them. And the numbers say that being an entrepreneur or a solopreneur or starting your own business is the best way out of that pickle. And so that's what I do now, and that's how to reach me.
Gregory, thank you so much for enlightening us on Executive.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much yourself. And I really appreciate what you're doing. I mean, you're helping, you know.
Thank you.
Namaste.